Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, episode 28, Deep into Media Center PCs. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here with UltimateAVMag.com and HomeTheaterMag.com. Today's guest geek of the week is Paul Heitlinger, founder of S1 Digital, makers of dedicated Media Center PCs and servers. Hey, Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
I'm really happy to have you on the show because I am less familiar with Media Center PCs than I am with other source devices in the home theater. So I'm really looking forward to learning quite a bit from you today.
I hope I can help you. I hope I can help you understand them.
Indeed. Those who are tuned in to the live video stream at live.twit.tv or logged into the chat room there or at irc.twit.tv can post questions for Paul, and I'll pass on as many as I can. So, Paul, let's start with what led you to found S1 Digital?
So I think the year was 2005, and I was doing something else with my life at the time. And I think I had just bought my first HDTV for our apartment, and I was looking for a solution that could basically replace all my different boxes with one device that could playback movies and music and photos and videos. And a lot of research led me to narrow down my choices to either building my own Media Center PC or buying one of these off-the-shelf network media player devices. And I found that in the end, nothing really compared to being the power and the flexibility of building a home theater PC, an HTPC as we call them. And so I built a home theater PC, put it in the living room, and you know, I was pretty wowed by it. I had lots of friends come over, and whenever we watched movies or TV, we would use my Media Center, and people all went, "Wow, that's amazing, that's great." And at the time, there was not really any other products on the market that really competed with a home theater PC, and there weren't really any other companies that made home theater PCs, and people suggested, "Hey, why don't you build these and sell them?" So in my spare time, I started building some home theater PCs and built a website and, you know, nailed down what people really wanted in a home theater PC and started selling them online. And that's how S1 Digital got started. And the company kind of grew from there. And now we've moved offices four times because we keep outgrowing our previous offices. And we're now based in New Jersey. We have a number of staff. Basically, to this day, there is nothing on the market. There's no dedicated solutions. There's no off-the-shelf solutions that can do the same sort of thing as what an S1 Digital Media Center or any type of media center can do. It just gives you the power and the flexibility to do what you want to do, to put on the TV or through your stereo, your receiver, anything that you want.
Now, a lot of companies have tried this in the past. Hewlett-Packard had one for quite a while. A lot of companies did, and they all seem to come and go.
Right.
Why is that? Why is that?
Well, there's two reasons for it, I believe. One is the home theater PC market is a niche market. It's not a product that's going to sell a million of devices, A, because the price point is pretty high, and B, the people that buy a home theater PC tend to be either the higher end or the do-it-yourselfers. So for a company like HP, you know, they need to make a rather large return on their investment, and they just weren't selling enough, I think, to warrant the investment in the product, whereas a company like S1 Digital, obviously this is all we do. We're a much smaller company, so we can focus on this. And for us to sell, you know, 1,000 units is good, whereas HP selling 1,000 units is bad. The other thing is, back in the early days of and when HP was selling them, I think it was Media Center 2005 that they were selling that they were using. And back then, you know, it was pretty much a nascent product. It was maybe not the most stable of platforms at the time back then and required a lot of hand-holding. And companies that were making media centers based on Windows 2005, Media Center 2005, you know, kind of pioneers, and there was a lot of learning to be done. There was still nothing that could compare with Media Center in terms of flexibility and power, but at the time, power comes with complexity, and I don't think HP were ready to, companies like HP were ready to handle all the support that was required, whereas company like S1 Digital, that where that's all we did, it was a lot easier for us to support the product because we knew all about Media Center. We also knew about AV equipment and plugging HDMI cables in and sync and resolutions, whereas your typical HP or large company support person based in, you know, wherever probably knew about how to do a RAM check or a hard disk check but didn't know why you were getting an overscan when plugging into your HDTV.
Yes, okay. Another issue that that strikes me generally about computers as media sources, and perhaps this is why they've had such difficulty in the marketplace. You know, everybody talks about computers as being a lean forward activity as opposed to watching TV, which is a lean back activity. Yes, thank you very much for illustrating that. Those who are watching the video can see that. And there's also the issue of reliability and computers crashing, right?
Right.
What's your take on that whole issue?
So that's one of the key things that held back Media Center in the past, I would say. Definitely reliability factor. These do run Windows you did have all the problems that came with a Windows installation. So again, you know, going back to Windows 2005, Windows XP, which was running Media Center 2005, yeah, there were some issues. There were some stability issues. But we're now on it was Media Center 2005, then there was Vista, and now we're on Windows 7. And Windows 7 on its own is a pretty stable platform. In addition to that, we develop our Media Centers as a standalone media service. So they're designed to work as a media center, not as a PC. So we customize the Windows image that ship on our media centers, and every time, and we usually do a refresh every 6 months or so. And every time we develop a new image or we build a new image and we're storing our drivers and add-ons and applications and we're tweaking the interfaces and all sorts of things like that, we do that with the sole purpose in mind of making the product stable as a media server. Mm-hmm. So we don't install bloatware. We don't install, you know, add-ons that aren't needed as a media center. We lock down certain features. We tweak, you know, sleep and registry settings to make the product as stable as possible. And in fact, our current product that we're shipping now, we started shipping last week, is probably our sixth or seventh or eighth, I've lost track, version of the operating system, and this is our most stable yet. We'll probably get to this a little later, but our market is custom installers. So the custom installer market wants a product that's reliable and stable that they can sell to their customers. So our products are designed to be installed by custom installers. So we don't sell
not to be bought by the end user and just necessarily stuck into their rack.
Correct. So our products are designed to be, you know, high end, where the installer wants the least amount of support issues. They want it to be a stable product where they can put it in a rack, they can set it up, and the end user can just use it without, you know, problems or without calling us. Now, Our current image is designed specifically for that. So, for example, we now lock down Media Center so customers can't get out of the Media Center interface. So to the end user, to the customer, it's an appliance. It's a media server appliance. There's no Windows desktop. There's no way to download applications. Well, there is, but they would have to figure out how to do that. And so to the end user and to the installer, the dealer, it's a product that they can put in and can do TV and music and photos and videos and streaming content, and that's all it does. And it's a very powerful solution. And we've tried, as I said, we've tried to make it, you know, so stable that people can't really screw it up. So to the end user, it doesn't look like a PC. The chassis doesn't look like a PC. They don't have a Windows desktop. There's no operating system. They just see a 10-foot. I think when you talk about lean forward and lean back, We refer to it as a 10-foot UI and a 2-foot UI, where a 10-foot UI is like an interface that's designed to be seen from 10 feet away from the couch. Mm-hmm. So the media center is designed to be used with a remote control, not with a keyboard and mouse. And the GUI itself is, you know, big text. And I'm sure you'll put up some screenshots later, but you'll be able to see exactly the sort of interface that you get.
Yes. In fact, if we can put those up now, we can take a look at what the interface looks like. Pardon me. And I did want to bring up the issue of user interface because it with a DVD player or a Blu-ray player, something like that, you know, it is an appliance. It has a user right. interface that everyone recognizes and is the same every time. And with a computer, of course, that's not true. So if we can put up that those screenshots for those who are watching the video, we can see what this user interface looks like, which I think is very attractive. While we're waiting for that, I will ask about. I looked on your website and took a look. There it is.
So that's just to describe what's coming up. That's the TV guide. If you have a screenshot, I think it's labeled home. Which gives you a view of the home screen, which has all the menu options. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if you like, I could go through exactly what Media Center is capable of doing. Yeah, that's the one. Do you want me to go through basically
yeah, sure.
what Media Center
go ahead.
Can do while you're go on the ahead. Screen? So the most powerful thing about Media Center is it does everything.
And you're talking about Windows Media Center now.
Right. So let me – yeah, okay. So let's clarify. So – our media centers are based on Windows 7, and within Windows 7, there's a product or an application called Media Center, Windows Media Center. And Windows Media Center is a way to view all your media using a 10-foot, as we say, or the lean-back interface. So it's all remote control driven. There's no mouse and keyboard, or you can use a mouse and keyboard, but it's designed to be used in the living room. You can sit on the couch and watch all your content and see all your content. Now, what it does is it aggregates all your content, whether it's from a disk or downloaded or somewhere else on your network. So if you go back to that home screenshot, I can go through all the different options that there are, all the different capabilities of Media Center. So,
there they go. Oh,
that's the TV guide. From memory, from the top, basically the features of Media Center are a movie library. So if you have movies, whether they're Blu-rays, DVDs, downloaded movies, you can playback and archive and get cover art for all your movies. You can get metadata, descriptions, cast and crew for all the movies. Netflix is integrated. So if you have a Netflix account, you can log into your Netflix queue and you can do two things. You can manage your Netflix queue where they send you movies. You can also stream movies from Netflix directly to the Media Center. And again, use your remote control to play them back. You can archive all your music, your CDs. If you have music that you have downloaded from iTunes or from other sources, if you ripped your CDs and your content is in MP3s, the Media Center can, again, download cover art and metadata and display it all. Or your music that can be sorted by genre, artist, album, year, that sort of thing. If you have photos, you can, from a digital camera, you can connect your digital camera and the Media Center can automatically import your photos. If you have photos anywhere on your network, you can access them through the Media Center. If you have videos from a camcorder, including the latest AVHC HD type videos, or any other type of video, they can be viewed here. One of the really cool things is Media Center supports TV, HD TV, from cable companies using what's called a cable card, which will give you access to all your cable content, whether it's premium content like HBO or Showtime in HD, all the channels you subscribe to, you'd be able to watch and record. You get that great TV guide that we saw a little earlier. You can categorize the TV guide. You can sort it by just HD content, by movies, by kids shows. You can actually create favorite. That's the TV guide. You can actually create a favorites list for each different user. So if there's four people in a household and you have a certain number of favorite channels, one of the cool things you can do is say, hey, these are my favorite channels. And there's a way to get to an option that shows you just your favorite channels.
Sure. I've done that. Yeah, I've done that certainly on my satellite system. I wanted to ask you about cable card. You mentioned that earlier.
Sure.
Isn't that dying? I mean, it was around for a while, but I know the cable companies really hated it because
they do.
So is there any other way to get your TV into this system other than cable card?
So cable card, if you have a cable subscription, cable card is the only way to be able to watch and record all your premium cable content on Media Center. You can also get unencrypted QAM or unencrypted cable TV without a cable card. But cable card is mandated by the FCC where any customer that asks for a cable card has to be provided one. That's an FCC rule. So if you have cable content and you want to get rid of your cable box and you want to watch it on a Media Center, cable card is the only way to do it. And TiVo, the TiVo Series 2 and 3, also is a cable card enabled product. And that's the only way to get cable card currently. Now, there's a lot of discussions in the FCC currently about other ways to decouple the cable infrastructure from the set-top box or from the end user. But currently, cable card is the only way to do it. We're going to be introducing a new cable card tuner that comes from a company called Seton Corporation that allows you to decode four TV streams from one cable card and one coax connection, which is really cool. So you can watch and record four channels at the same time using one cable card and just one single coax connection. This is the first device that will actually enable four streams of TV from one cable card device.
Now, I'm getting a couple of questions. Go ahead.
I was just going to say quickly, if you have an Xbox 360 or up to five Xbox 360, the Xbox 360 has something called a Media Center Extender built into it, which will let you stream that live and recorded TV over your network to other rooms in the house. So you can actually create a distributed, or a centralized TV recorded store that can then be distributed around the house over your network. So instead of needing to run RG6 coax cable to every room and having a set-top box in every room, you can have a centralized TV store and then put Xbox 360s around the house. You can have up to six zones of live and recorded TV going at the same time all over your network, which is really, really powerful.
Yes, indeed. I want to get to streaming here in just a minute, but first I want to say that we've got a couple of questions in the chat room about TV tuners and what TV tuners should. One guy here asked what TV tuner should I get? Not sure. And what about dual TV tuner cards? We'll pick up digital HD channels in Windows 7 Media Center. What have you got to say to people about tuners? Which I, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, is a card that you put into a PC. I'm sure you must include them in your Media Center package. What can you tell people about what they need in terms of TV tuner cards?
Sure. So first of all, just a little bit of a background to TV standards. there's a number of different TV signals that you can receive. One is called encrypted QAM, which is basically your cable feed, which includes all the premium content such as HBO and Discovery and channels like that, Showtime. And it's up to each cable company which channels they encrypt and which channels they don't encrypt. So if you wanted to use a TV tuner that can receive all the TV channels you subscribe to on a cable company, then there's currently only one tuner and it's about to come out to the market. It's called a Seton tuner. And that's the one that I was just mentioning that supports four TV streams from one coax and one cable card.
They do encrypted QAM.
It does encrypted QAM, correct.
But that's the only one that does.
That's the only tuner. ATI had a tuner that was just discontinued that was on the market for 2 or 3 years now that would enable one cable card and one TV stream from each tuner, and that was a USB-based tuner. That's just been discontinued, so this new tuner that's coming onto the market from this company, Seton, is an internal PCI Express-based card, and it's currently the only tuner that supports fully encrypted QAM from a cable card tuner.
Can you spell the name of that company, please?
It's CETON. The website is setoncorp.com.
Mm-hmm. Can people buy that on their own, or is it only available to OEMs such as yourself?
It is available. You'd have to go to the Seton Corp website to check out where to buy it from. They're very limited quantities, I think, initially, but you know they're ramping up production. So you will be able to buy it retail, if not already. We will be including it as our standard tuner in all our media centers where customers want a TV tuner. And the retail on that, I believe, is $400. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't want cable card, if you're one of these people that just need basic cable, unencrypted cable, then there's a number of TV tuners on the market. And you want a tuner that can support unencrypted QAM, Q-A-M. Unencrypted QAM is all your basic cable channels. And usually it's the same channels that you would get if you had an over-the-air antenna. Most cable companies, I think all cable companies have to provide certain basic channels for free to anyone that has a cable connection. That's like ABC, CBS, Fox, PBS, channels like that. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of companies that make unencrypted QAM tuners. You know, they're $100, $60, $100-odd. They're relatively cheap. There's both internal tuners that work via PCI or PCI Express, and there's external USB-based tuners. So plenty of choice there. Mm-hmm. And then the final type of tuner is an ATSC tuner, which is over the air, which you would need an antenna for, and that would get you all the channels that are broadcast in your area using an antenna. Again, the same basic channels that you'd probably get with unencrypted QAM, but you need an antenna for. And again, most of the tuners that support QAM, unencrypted QAM, also support ATSC. So your choices are, you know, encrypted QAM tuner, of which there's only one tuner, Seton Corp. Seton's tuner, or you could get an encrypted QAM or ATSC tuner, of which there are many.
And does the Seton card also include ATSC?
Yes, the Seton tuner also would include unencrypted QAM. If you didn't put a cable card into it, it would also support unencrypted QAM. I believe it supports ATSC, but I'm not sure. I'd have to go to the website to check that. But you guys offer
ATSC tuning on your media center PCs, I assume, over the air tuning.
Well, most of our customers wouldn't be using. Most of our customers have cable or they have satellite. If you have satellite, you can't really use our media centers to watch a record because there's no solution for watching a recording. There's no available solution for watching satellite on the media center. Most customers are going to be using cable card with our media center, so that's basically the only tuner that we offer. If somebody wanted ATSC, then yes, we could include it as an option if they wanted.
Right. I've got one question here about DirecTV and satellite, and I noticed on your website that if you have a satellite set-top box, you can come into your media center, but only with S-Video.
Right.
So no high def, obviously.
Right. So media center supports a number of tuning spaces, one of which is an analog S-Video input. Back in the old days, before cable card was enabled on media center supported tuning of set-top boxes, whether they were cable or satellite, using an S-Video input, and it would use an IR blaster to change the channels. So the way to connect a satellite set-top box to the media center is still there, but it only works with S-Video, and it uses an IR blaster to change the channels.
Right.
So if you have a satellite box, you're not really going to be using media center to do what you're watching and recording because you only have an S-Video satellite, an S-Video connection.
And very likely the satellite company will provide you with a DVR functionality anyway.
Right. Now, the idea of the media center is to have one box that does everything to get rid of the set-top box from the cable company or the satellite company. But right. if you have satellite, you're not going to be using media center to record or watch your media or your satellite TV because it's going to be in standard def. So usually people that have satellite will keep their TV separate and then use media center for all their music, photos, and videos and movies.
Other stuff like that. Is there any hope in the future of DirecTV or Dish, say, making available to media centers a card, a tuner card that would let you use their system? Or would they really not want that because they want you to use their box?
Well, it's funny you should say that because both DirecTV and Dish did have working prototypes of set-top boxes that did connect natively to media center and could enable media center to watch and record satellite programming in all its HD glory. So though the technical hurdles were overcome and there were working models. You could, you know, go to Google and search for Dish TV or DirecTV with media center. Unfortunately, for whatever reasons, business reasons, they decided not to release these products. And I can't comment on why they did or didn't do that, but they were, proof of concepts were enabled and they were tested and they worked, but they decided not to release these products. Mm. If they release them in the future, I don't know.
Now, getting back to the server question and distributing your media around the house, we have a question here that says, I've seen others like Linksys that make extenders, but they stopped support. This fellow doesn't game and he doesn't want to buy a game box like the Xbox 360 to use as an extender. But so how else can he get his HTPC, which he in fact has apparently, what would he need to get an extender if it's not an Xbox 360?
So the Xbox 360 is the only extender on the market that supports TV currently.
Really?
There were a number of others from a company called Linksys, as he mentioned, and D-Link had one, but they stopped making them, and they weren't that good, to tell you the truth. The Xbox 360 is actually very good as an extender. The new models are very quiet. The $200, which was roughly the same price as the extenders were before, you can set them up so they go directly into Media Center. So you don't even see the dashboard, I think, the Xbox 360 dashboard.
Oh, the user interface there?
Right. So that you can set them up to go directly into Media Center and use them as a Media Center extender without even knowing that they're a gaming machine. and like I said, the current ones are quite quiet. I know that was one of the issues with the older versions of the Xbox 360, but they're now great as an extender. Mm-hmm. Just one point on that. In the market that we serve, one of the problems with the Xbox 360 is it doesn't support Blu-ray, whether, a ripped, H.264 video in the Blu-ray format or the Blu-ray disc itself. So we came up with we sell to the high-end market kind of our own extender, which is a lot more expensive than the Xbox 360, but it also does a lot more. So we offer a product that is a huge storage server that can be put in a rack in the basement that supports up to 32 terabytes of storage and expandable from there. You can use to store all your HD movies and music and photos and videos on. And then we have a very small client. In fact, I have one here. I don't know if you can see that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is an S1 Digital extender.
Mm-hmm. What's sometimes called a client.
A client. We call it a Media Center client that supports a Blu-ray. It has a Blu-ray drive in it, so it can play back Blu-rays directly. It also plays back any content that you have on the server, and you can connect these small boxes over your network, in 10 or more rooms throughout your house. Mm-hmm. And these small Media Center PCs, which they are, but they have small hard drives, support HDMI 1.3 with the full lossless HD audio codecs and deep color support over HDMI, and they'll play back all the content from the server in other rooms. One of the other things that S1 Digital has is a way to stream cable content from a server to one of our little Media Center extenders. So again, we have a solution that would let you put small little client boxes in every room Put everything else in a head end in a rack, all your TV tuners, cable car tuners, and then stream that live TV to over the network to our clients. And now we have a solution that supports Blu-ray, TV, music, photos, videos, and everything that an extender couldn't do. Again, we only sell these to custom installers, but we have a solution for certain customers that to be able to do both TV and Blu-rays over the network, now which an Xbox 360 can't do.
Right, right. Now, that box can play a Blu-ray disc, a physical disc, in the local zone, we should say. I mean, you put one of these in each of your rooms, which we sometimes call zones,
right,
and then you can play a Blu-ray from that box, or
right,
you can stream stuff from the central server.
Exactly. If you have a non-copy-protected disc that's on your server, you could play that over the network to one of these clients, and you get the full, you know, menu and everything else.
Okay, now we get to it, which is clearly you can store DVDs on your server and Blu-rays, and you said the magic words there, non-copy protected. What are the legal issues here? I mean, what if somebody wants to put their Blu-rays on their primary central server and not have to schlep discs around?
Right. So, I mean, what a customer does with our servers is up to them. I mean, it's like buying a PC. Anything you can do on a PC, you can do on one of our machines. Our servers will play back any video files that, a Windows PC will support. So, if you have a Blu-ray formatted if you have Blu-ray formatted content that's on the server, and it could come from anywhere, it could be your own private, you know, Blu-ray, then our clients and media centers will all support that standard. So anything that's on the server that is a Blu-ray standard will be played back over the network from the clients. But mm-hmm. we don't ship any systems that will break any copy protection. Like I said, once a customer has a system, anything they could do on a normal PC, they could do on our media centers. We can't stop people from doing that.
Yeah. And in fact, there are, I mean, we just have to acknowledge the fact that there are now products, software products, I guess, that can break the copy protection of Blu-rays and rip them onto a hard drive. And you can do that on virtually any sufficiently powerful PC, I guess. And you could, in fact, do that on yours as well, except for the fact that you don't allow access to the Windows interface, right? You put a shell in front of that, the user interface that we were looking at earlier. I guess it would be a little more difficult to do on your system than on some generic PC, right?
Well, we give our installers, so we actually have two user accounts. We set our systems up so they have two user accounts. The default user account goes straight into Media Center, and there's no Windows, there's no Explorer shell running, there's no Windows desktop running. But we give installers, custom installers, or if they want to give access to their customers, the user, there's a second admin type user account that gives full access to the Windows desktop. So settings, configuration, tweaks, they can install apps if they need to install third-party apps to enable them to do things. But that full functionality is there. And then once they finish making all their changes and updates and installations, they would just log back onto the other user to get back to the Media Center shell.
Mm-hmm.
So we give, you know, full Windows functionality is there if it's needed. And if a customer wanted it and an installer wanted to give access to their customer, then, you know, we could disable that as well.
Mm-hmm. But as a company, of course, you can't advocate or condone having the ability to rip copy-protected Blu-rays onto your server.
We don't know anything about that.
Okay, very good.
Just one point, our servers will download metadata and cover art for any CD, DVD, or Blu-ray that is in the drive. So one of the great things is that you can see a view of all the cover art and metadata. And I think one of the pictures that I sent you has that view where you see all the cover art of all the movies that are on the server or in the hard drive, on the optical drive mm-hmm. on the server. So you could get great things like cover picture of the disc, the actors who were in it, the synopsis, the soundtracks, everything you would see on the back of a Blu-ray disc is now presented on the screen, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Maybe if our engineer can find that that particular picture of the cover art.
My Movies.
I'm sorry, say again?
I think the picture is called My Movies, if he's looking for it.
Okay, if he's looking for that, we'll get that up on the screen when we can. There it is.
Oh, no, that's the music. That's the music. That's the music view. So you can see what the music view looks like with all the cover art of all the music there.
All the CDs that you've ripped in other words.
All the CDs that you've ripped. Right. Uh-huh. And that music, just by the way, music, the same with videos, photos, anything. If you have a NAS or anything anywhere in your network, you can actually access that content natively within the Media Center interface. So you don't actually have to move anything around the network to access it. The Media Center can access that content from any shared folder on the network. Mm. But yes, that was the movie screen
here. There it is. There's the movie screen.
You can move around. You can see the Harry Potter is highlighted. But with your remote control, you'd be moving around. You could highlight any movie there and get more information about it. If you clicked on a movie, on a picture of a movie, you'd actually see more information about that movie.
Right, and then be able to start playback and whatever.
Right, so long as it was not copy protected.
Exactly.
Or if it was in the disk. Drive.
Regarding server systems, that is distributed. Moving playing the content here or there, one room or another on Xbox 360 or one of your extenders or something else. What kind of bandwidth do you need on your network?
So if you're playing Blu-rays, we would highly recommend gigabit Ethernet, gigabit switches, gigabit Ethernet. We would isolate our servers from the rest of the data on the network. So that doesn't mean you need to set up VLANs or private networks, but we would recommend that you put all the S1 digital hardware on its own switch. Gigabit Ethernet is recommended if you want to be streaming Blu-rays. If you're using Xbox 360s, it doesn't really matter as much because the Xbox 360 only supports 100 megabit per second anyway. And the bit rate of an HDTV stream is much lower than a Blu-ray, and 100 megabit would support that. So gigabit, we would always recommend gigabit where possible anyway. It's the same cost as, you could use Cat. Generally, you would be routing Cat 5e around the house, and all you're doing is replacing the 100 megabit per second switches with gigabit switches. And you have
and that, the cable will support both the higher bandwidth, no problem.
Yeah, I mean, there's Cat 6 as well, which is recommended for gigabit Ethernet. But Cat, in our experience, Cat 5e works fine. I mean, unless you're installing huge long runs and, there's lots of interference. But Cat 5e generally would be fine.
Right. What about Wi-Fi? I would assume that's not generally recommended.
Well, it depends. So Wi-Fi for Blu-ray is probably not recommended. At my house, personally, I'm running a Media Center extender in my bedroom because I live in a very old house. It's 80 years old, and I'm considered many times selling the house just because I can't run Ethernet around the house. I can't put speakers in the walls. It's one of these old lathe and plaster houses. I don't know why
my God.
This house. But anyway, that's another story. So the only way I can get network upstairs to my bedroom is wirelessly. So I have a wireless end router in my living room. And I have a wireless Media Center extender in the bedroom, and I can stream TV, HDTV, without any problems at all.
Over which Wi-Fi? Which flavor of Wi-Fi?
It's N, wireless N at 2.4 gig, at 2.4 gigahertz spectrum. Mm-hmm. So it's not even the 5 gigahertz spectrum. And it works fine. Is there a lot of interference? There's probably four other Wi-Fi networks that I can detect in my area. So there's not a lot of interference, but your mileage may vary. Every scenario is different. It depends on the house, the type of router you're using, interference from other wireless devices, microwave ovens, cordless phones. In my particular case, it works fine, and I'm sure there's a lot of other customers and users who are using wireless just fine. Could I stream multiple live TV streams to over wireless? Probably not, but one, two devices works fine.
Now, that's high definition. What about standard definition? Streaming multiple streams of that, say somebody in the bedroom wants to watch one show in standard def and somebody else in another room wants to watch a different show. Any problem there?
Well, standard def uses probably a quarter of the bandwidth of high def. So if you can stream high def, you could probably stream a couple of different standard def shows. But who watches standard def anymore?
certainly not me.
I have Verizon Fios at home, and I don't even know what's below channel 700. No, 500. I don't even know what exists down there.
Well, speaking of Fios, that's a very interesting point. You can't really interface that with Media Center either, just like you can't really interface satellite. Isn't that correct?
Fios, even though Fios runs over fiber to the home, once it's in the home, the signal is the same as any QAM signal.
Use QAM. Okay.
It becomes a QAM signal. So you can get cable card with Fios just like you can with Cablevision or Time Warner. Once it's in the home, it's no different.
What about AT&T U-verse?
I don't know about AT&T U-verse. I would have to get that checked. I'm not sure.
Because that's also another very high bandwidth service into the home. They provide, like Fios does, internet access, high-speed internet access, telephone service, and television service. So if
the signal, once it gets to your home, if the signal is QAM, if it's the same, if you can plug that RG6, that coax connection into your TV and do a channel scan and get TV channels, then the chances are you can use it.
Mm-hmm. We got one question in the chat room, wondering how in particular, I guess the TV tuner would work in the Canadian market where there are no cable cards.
Sorry. Unfortunately, Canada, our friends up in Canada, and we have this question quite a bit. Unfortunately, Canada doesn't support the same standards as the United States. So there is no cable card. I don't think QAM works. I don't know about ATSC. But unfortunately, at this stage, there is no cable card enabled Canadian tuner.
So we can't really get high-def cable into your media center or really any media center in the Canadian market.
I know there was a lot of people trying who were living near the U.S. border trying to get ATSC to work over the air, to work from American channels. Excuse me. But I don't know where they got to in their project because they were listing, as part of the setup, you put in your zip code and where you are, and Media Center knows all the TV providers in your area. So you put in a Canadian zip code, and it automatically excludes all the U.S. TV providers. So I think it was a bit of a catch-22. You couldn't get TV because you're putting in a local zip code, which excluded all the TV tuning setup for the U.S.-based transmitters.
Dang.
Right. But I'm not an expert on the Canadian TV system, so don't take my – and that was a little while ago that I last checked, and I'm not the person who knows about that sort of stuff. So unfortunately, right. I don't know. I'd have to look it up and get back to you.
Right, right. had a couple of questions about audio formats, which is – let's see. I got one just here from Boracua Tech. I think that's how you would say it. What about playing lossless audio formats like FLAC? He didn't think that Media Center supports that natively. But why don't you talk a little bit about different audio formats, lossless and lossy? I mean, I'm sure you must do MP3. What about WAV files or FLAC in this case, lossless? What do you support? What can Media Center support in general?
Sure. So out of the box, Media Center supports MP3, WMA, Windows Media Audio, AAC, which is Apple's, I think it's AAC, Apple's iTunes format. As long as it's not copy protected, Media Center will natively play back any iTunes downloaded music, which is great. So if you have your iTunes content, Media Center will automatically see all that content. Out of the box, it'll support WMA lossless. We configure our systems to rip automatically at MP3, 320 kilobits per second, which is the highest MP3 bit rate that you can support. And the reason we default to MP3 is because it's the most universal format. You can't copy your WMAs to an iPod or an iPhone, and you can't play back AAC on iPhone or iPod type devices. With respects to what was it, MK, FLAC.
FLAC, yeah.
You can, so Media Center doesn't support FLAC out of the box. You can add in manually a FLAC codec and get Media Center to support FLAC in the GUI, but it is a manual process of installing that codec and getting it to see it. Mm. In terms of WAV, it'll playback WAV, it'll see WAV files, but there's no metadata associated with WAV, so you're not going to get anything other than the file name shown. You won't get cover art or anything like that.
Hmm. Hmm. And you could, I suppose, or the installer in your case, could reconfigure the system to default to a lossless format instead of a lossy format if you knew you weren't going to, for example, be putting things on iTunes, I mean, on your iPad or iPod or iPhone, and just putting them around in the house.
So for ripping, Media Center will only, for lossless, Media Center will only support WMA lossless. Mm. If you want to have lossless FLAC, then you would have to rip it on another device, or you wouldn't, or not in the Media Center interface. So our recommendation would be, if you're going to be using FLAC or a non-supported format out of the box, then to rip it on another computer or a PC or a laptop, and then just make that content available to the Media Center.
Mm-hmm. Pinball Guy asks about controlling the server with something. Something other than the supplied remote, touchscreen devices, a Droid, iPad widgets, so on like that.
Sure. So we actually have a partnership with another company called Autonomic Controls. Autonomic Controls make a add-in that lets you control the Media Center through a third-party device, such as generally it's been Crestron, AMX, RTI, HAI, or a flash-based application. So that's given our dealers a way to control the Media Center with full two-way control. It gives you cover art, metadata, lists on a touchscreen controller, and in the high-end custom installer industry, Crestron, kind of rules the roost. So that was very important for us to be able to enable that. Autonomic Controls are bringing out a iPad and iPhone enabled control solution, price unknown, that will let you have full two-way control of Media Center to be able to browse all the content on the Media Center, on our Media Centers, and then you know it's a matter of selecting, I want to play this song, and queue it up on the Media Center from your iPhone or from a touchscreen or any other device like that. So mm-hmm. there are solutions, there will be solutions that let you control Media Center from an iPhone or an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if you're in the custom installer industry, then it also provides a way to control the Media Center from your existing, Crestron or AMX or other type of control solution
right,
as well.
Right. I wanted to get a little bit into the whole concept of DIY, because this is how you actually got started and how you founded S1 right. Digital, was building your own computer. Johnny Ringo in the chat room asks, what are the minimum requirements for good performance out of the Media Center into, say, an Xbox 360. He's tried using it from his PC, and the performance is terrible, he says.
So if you're getting bad performance to your Xbox, it's not necessarily the PC's fault. It may be the switch or the router that you're using. We've found that the Media Center extenders, not so much the Xbox, but the older D-Links, Cisco Linksys extenders were very temperamental when it came to network performance. And the type of switch that you use or the router that you use or the devices that were connected to the switch could actually make a huge difference to performance. So you could have a very – for example, we had a customer that had a Core i7 CPU and a DX58 motherboard and 6 gigs of RAM and a RAID controller, one of our top-end Media Centers, and they were getting dropouts and stuttering when they were watching live TV on their extenders. And, this was a pretty large job, and the customer wasn't happy. And, we looked into what switches they were using and what routers they were using, and they were using, cheapy $30 switches, and they were using, things were plugged into different switches and routers. And once we, found a good switch, we used in this particular case a D-Link business class switch, but I think Netgear also have some, good business class switches, then all the problems cleared up. The key thing that you want to look at when using extenders with Media Center is the packet buffering on each port of the switch. That's the most important thing. You want to get a switch that has the largest amount of the biggest size, the biggest packet buffers per port, so that it can buffer the packets coming out of the Media Center in a way that the extender can receive them. The problem is, because the extenders are only 100 megabit per second devices and the Media Center is gigabit, it keeps sending all these packets out and the extender just can't handle it. It goes, can't handle all these packets. And a port buffer enables it to slow down or to buffer those packets until the extender is ready for them. So that's one thing to look at. But for people building their own Media Center, you know, Intel just came out with a really cool chipset that supports very high-end video and audio integrated into the motherboard, which, you know, previously wasn't possible. A good starting point would be a DH57 motherboard with a Core i3 CPU, 2 gigs of RAM and Windows 7 Home Premium, Blu-ray drive and whatever size hard drive you want, and you can build yourself a pretty good system for a few $100, $800, $900, $600, $700, something like that, whatever the price comes out to be. But the Core i3 and DH57 motherboards are really a great way to get started.
And you can get, clearly you can get Blu-ray, DVD drives now, and you'd want to put those in there as well and so on.
Right, you need a Blu-ray drive, you'd need some sort of Blu-ray player because Media Center doesn't support Blu-ray out of the box, either ArcSoft Total Media Theater or CyberLink's equivalent player. You'd need, that's pretty much it. RAM, CPU, motherboard, hard drive, Blu-ray drive, and software. It would get you a very good Media Center PC.
Yeah. One more quick question. Can someone build their own extender from an old PC?
If you wanted to be able to play back Blu-rays over the network, you know, you'd want some sort of minimum spec processor and video output to enable Blu-ray playback, which is pretty resource intensive. They could upgrade the video card to an NVIDIA or ATI video card if it was old. But if you go to CyberLink or ArcSoft's website and look up their Blu-ray players, they'll have some sort of minimum spec so you can check your old PC spec against their minimum spec. And if it matches it, yeah, you should be fine.
Another quick point I'll make, and then we really have to wrap it up. There are now Blu-ray players from Samsung, Sony, LG, Panasonic that can act as Media Center extenders, essentially. They have an Ethernet port they can hook up to your network. Am I not correct on that?
I don't believe any of them will play back a movie over the network. Some of them will play back video files from
or
a PC.
Or things like that. There's Netflix. A lot of file sharing things going on there.
Right, a lot of internet streaming content, but none of them will play back ripped movies, DVDs or Blu-rays or certain video files over the network. And, of course, you're locked down to exactly what the provider wants to give you. I mean, what the manufacturer wants to give you. So there's no flexibility in terms of codec support or anything like that.
Right, understood. Well, hey, Paul, thanks very much. I really appreciate the show and the information that you have imparted. I think I know a bit more about it.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. You can look at S1 Digital at s1digital.com. That's the numeral one. And check out what they're offering there. My online homes are ultimateavmag.com and hometheatermag.com. You can email me at scott@twit.tv and follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott. Next week, my guest geek is scheduled to be audio legend Bob Carver. And I'm really looking forward to talking to him. Now that this podcast includes video, I invite anyone with a question for Bob to ask it in a video. Then simply post your question on YouTube or vid.ly and send me the link. And we'll try to include it in the show because we certainly want to get some other faces in the video stream here. So I look forward to that very much. And until then, geek out.